37 minutes after taking off, Langdon and Vittoria were on the ground in Rome. Langdon checked his watch when they were outside on the tarmac. "Little old for cartoons, aren't you?" Vittoria asked, giving him a look. "I'm sorry?" "Your wristwatch. I saw it on the plane." Langdon flushed slightly. He was accustomed to having to defend his timepiece. The collector's edition Mickey Mouse watch had been a childhood gift from his parents. Despite the contorted foolishness of Mickey's outstretched arms designating the hour, it was the only watch Langdon had ever worn. "It's 6 o'clock, he said. Vittoria nodded. "I think our ride's here." Langdon heard the distant whine and looked up. Approaching from the north was a helicopter, slicing low across the runway. The craft was white and carried a coat of arms emblazoned on the side, 2 skeleton keys crossing a shield and papal crown. As soon as he landed, the pilot jumped from the cockpit and strode toward them across the tarmac. Vittoria looked uneasy. "That's our pilot?" The man looked like he was festooned for a Shakespearean melodrama. His puffy tunic was vertically striped in brilliant blue and gold. He wore matching pantaloons and spats. On his feet were black flats that looked like slippers. On top of it all, he wore a black felt beret. "Traditional Swiss Guard uniforms," Langdon explained, "designed by Michelangelo himself." Despite his garish attire, the pilot moved toward them with all the rigidity and dignity of a U.S. Marine. "You are from CERN?" he asked, arriving before them. His voice was steely. "Yes, sir," Langdon replied. "You made remarkable time," he said, giving the X-33 a mystified stare. He turned to Vittoria. "Ma'am, do you have any other clothing?"
"I beg your pardon?"
He motioned to her legs. "Short pants are not permitted inside Vatican City."
"This is all I have," she said. "We came in a hurry."
The guard nodded, clearly displeased. "This way, please." As the chopper headed north, Langdon spied the Roman Forum, the heart of pre-Christian Rome. To the west, the wide basin of the Tiber River wound enormous arcs across the city. "Straight ahead," the pilot said, climbing higher. Langdon and Vittoria looked out and saw it. Like a mountain parting the morning fog, the colossal dome rose out of the haze before them. St. Peter's Basilica. The marble facade blazed like fire in the afternoon sun. Adorned with 140 statues of saints, martyrs, and angels, the Herculean edifice stretched 2 football fields wide and a staggering 6 long. Incredibly, though, not even a citadel of this magnitude could dwarf the piazza before it. A sprawling expanse of granite, St. Peter's Square was a staggering open space in the congestion of Rome, like a classical Central Park. In front of the basilica, bordering the vast oval common, 284 columns swept outward in 4 concentric arcs of diminishing size, an architectural trompe-l'oeil used to heighten the piazza's sense of grandeur. As he stared at the magnificent shrine before him, Langdon wondered what St. Peter would think if he were here now. The saint had died a gruesome death, crucified upside down on this very spot. Now he rested in the most sacred of tombs, buried 5 stories down, directly beneath the central cupola of the basilica.
"Look,"
Vittoria said suddenly, grabbing Langdon's arm. She motioned frantically downward toward St. Peter's Square directly beneath them. Langdon put his face to the window and looked.
"Over there," she said, pointing.
He looked. The rear of the piazza looked like a parking lot, crowded with a dozen or so trailer trucks. Huge satellite dishes pointed skyward from the roof of every truck. Langdon felt suddenly confused, wondering if the news of the antimatter had already leaked out. Vittoria seemed suddenly tense.
"Why is the press here? What's going on?"
The pilot turned and gave her an odd look over his shoulder. "What's going on? You don't know?"
"No,"
she fired back.
"Il conclave," he said. "It is to be sealed in about an hour. The whole world is watching." Il conclave.
The word rang a long moment in Langdon's ears before dropping like a brick to the pit of his stomach. The Vatican conclave. How could he have forgotten? It had been in the news recently. 15 days ago, the Pope, after a tremendously popular 12-year reign, had passed away. Every paper in the world had carried the story about the Pope's fatal stroke while sleeping. A sudden and unexpected death, many whispered, was suspicious. But now, in keeping with the sacred tradition, 15 days after the death of a pope, the Vatican was holding Il Conclave, the sacred ceremony in which the 165 cardinals of the world, the most powerful men in Christendom, gathered in Vatican City to elect the new pope. "Every cardinal on the planet is here today," Langdon thought as the chopper passed over St. Peter's Basilica. "The entire power structure of the Roman Catholic Church is sitting on a time bomb." Cardinal Mortati gazed up at the lavish ceiling of the Sistine Chapel and tried to find a moment of quiet reflection. The frescoed walls echoed with the voices of cardinals from nations around the globe. The men jostled in the candle-lit tabernacle, whispering excitedly and consulting with one another in numerous languages, the universal tongues being English, Italian, and Spanish. As was the custom, all of the chapel's windows had been covered in black velvet in the name of secrecy. This assured that no one on the inside could send signals or communicate in any way with the outside world. The result was a profound darkness lit only by candles, a shimmering radiance that seemed to purify everyone it touched, making them all ghostly, like saints. "What privilege," Mortati thought, "that I am to oversee this sanctified event." Cardinals over 80 years of age were too old to be eligible for election and did not attend conclave. But at 79 years old, Mortati was the most senior cardinal here and had been appointed to oversee the proceedings. Following tradition, the cardinals gathered here 2 hours before conclave to catch up with friends and engage in last-minute discussion. At 7 p.m., the late Pope's chamberlain would arrive, give opening prayer, and then leave. Then the Swiss guard would seal the doors and lock all the cardinals inside. It was then that the oldest and most secretive political ritual in the world would begin. The cardinals would not be released until they had decided who among them would be the next pope. At the moment, Mortati was on edge, because an unexpected development had emerged. Mystifyingly, 4 cardinals were absent from the chapel. Mortati knew that all the exits to Vatican City were guarded, and the missing cardinals could not have gone far. But still, with less than an hour before opening prayer, he was feeling disconcerted. After all, the 4 missing men were no ordinary cardinals. They were the cardinals. The chosen 4. "Terra firma," the pilot announced as they touched down on the Vatican's helipad. He exited and opened the sliding door for Langdon and Vittoria. Langdon descended from the craft and turned to help Vittoria, but she had already dropped effortlessly to the ground. Every muscle in her body seemed tuned to one objective, finding the antimatter before it left a horrific legacy. After stretching a reflective sun tarp across the cockpit window, the pilot ushered them to an oversized electric golf cart waiting near the helipad. The cart whisked them silently alongside the country's western border. A 50-foot-tall cement bulwark, thick enough to ward off attacks even by tanks. Lining the interior of the wall, posted at 50-meter intervals, Swiss guards stood at attention, surveying the interior of the grounds. "Attenzione," the pilot said, turning sharply into a rotary. As the cart wound round, Langdon could barely believe the sight now coming into view. Giardini Vaticani, he thought. The heart of Vatican City. Directly ahead rose the rear of St. Peter's Basilica, a view, Langdon realized, most people never saw. To the right loomed the Palace of the Tribunal, the lush papal residence rivaled only by Versailles in its Baroque embellishment. After parking the cart on the wide lawn directly behind St. Peter's Basilica, the guard escorted Langdon and Vittoria up a stone escarpment to a marble plaza off the back of the basilica. Crossing the plaza, they approached the rear wall of the basilica and followed it through a triangular courtyard, across Via Belvedere, and into a series of buildings closely huddled together. The office of the Swiss Guard is housed adjacent to Il Corpo di Vigilanza, directly northeast of St. Peter's Basilica. The office is a squat stone building. On either side of the entrance, like two stone statues, stood a pair of guards. As Langdon and Vittoria approached, the two guards stepped forward, crossing their traditional long swords, blocking the entrance. One looked up at the pilot in confusion.
"I pantaloni,"
he said, motioning to Vittoria's shorts. The pilot waved them off.
"Il comandante vuole vederli subito."
The guards frowned. Reluctantly, they stepped aside. Inside, the air was cool. The hallways contained paintings Langdon was certain any museum worldwide would gladly have featured in its main gallery. The pilot pointed down a steep set of stairs.
"Down, please."
Langdon and Vittoria followed the white marble treads as they descended between a gauntlet of nude male sculptures. They reached the bottom of the stairs and dead-ended at a heavy steel door. The guard on duty typed an entry code and the doors slid open. Langdon and Vittoria entered. Beyond the threshold was absolute mayhem. The room was a lushly adorned Renaissance library, complete with inlaid bookshelves, oriental carpets, and colorful tapestries, and yet the space bristled with high-tech gear. Banks of computers, faxes, electronic maps of the Vatican complex, and televisions tuned to CNN. Men in colorful pantaloons typed feverishly on computers and listened intently in futuristic headphones.
"Wait here," the guard said.
Langdon and Vittoria waited as the guard crossed the room to an exceptionally tall, wiry man in a dark blue military uniform. He was talking on a cellular phone and stood so straight he was almost bent backward. The guard said something to him, and the man shot a glance over at Langdon and Vittoria. He nodded, then turned his back on them and continued his phone call. When the commander finally clicked off his phone and approached across the room, he seemed to grow with each step. His dark hair was cropped in a military buzz cut, and his eyes burned with a kind of hardened determination only attainable through years of intense training. The commander addressed them in English. His voice was startlingly quiet for such a large man, barely a whisper. It bit with a tight military efficiency.
"Good afternoon," he said. "I am Commander Olivetti, Commandante Principale of the Swiss Guard. I am the one who called your director."
Vittoria gazed up at him.
"Thank you for seeing us, sir."
The commander did not respond. He motioned for them to follow and led them through the tangle of electronics to a door in the side wall of the chamber.
"Enter," he said,
holding the door for them. Langdon and Vittoria walked through and found themselves in a darkened control room where a wall of video monitors was cycling lazily through a series of black and white images of the complex. A young guard sat watching the images intently.
40,
Olivetti said. The guard packed up and left. Olivetti walked over to one of the screens and pointed to it. Then he turned toward his guests.
"This image is from a remote camera hidden somewhere inside Vatican City. I'd like an explanation."
Langdon and Vittoria looked at the screen and inhaled in unison. The image was absolute, no doubt. It was CERN's antimatter canister. Inside, a shimmering droplet of metallic liquid hung ominously in the air, lit by the rhythmic blinking of the LED digital clock. Eerily, the area around the canister was almost entirely dark, as if the antimatter were in a closet or darkened room. At the top of the monitor flashed superimposed text, live feed, camera number 86. Vittoria looked at the time remaining on the flashing indicator on the canister.
Under 6 hours, she whispered to Langdon, her face tense.
Langdon checked his watch.
So we have until...
He stopped, a knot tightening in his stomach.
Midnight,
Vittoria said, with a withering look.
Midnight, Langdon thought. A flare for the dramatic.
Olivetti's whisper now sounded more like a hiss.
Does this object belong to your facility?
Vittoria nodded.
Yes, sir. It was stolen from us. It contains an extremely combustible substance called antimatter.
Olivetti looked unmoved.
I am quite familiar with incendiaries, Ms. Vitra. I have not heard of antimatter.
It's a new technology. We need to locate it immediately, or evacuate Vatican City.
Evacuate? Are you aware what is going on here this evening?
Yes, sir. And the lives of your cardinals are in danger. We have about 6 hours. Have you made any headway locating the canister?
Olivetti shook his head.
We haven't started looking. We are exceptionally busy looking for something else, and I do not have the luxury of dedicating manpower to a situation until I get some facts.
There is only one relevant fact at this moment, sir, Vittoria said, that being that in 6 hours that device is going to vaporize this entire complex.
Olivetti stood motionless.
Ms. Vitra, there is something you need to know. Despite the archaic appearance of Vatican City, every single entrance, both public and private, is equipped with the most advanced sensing equipment known to man. If someone tried to enter with any sort of incendiary device, it would be detected instantly.
Very impressive, Vittoria said, matching Olivetti's cool. Unfortunately, antimatter is non-radioactive. Its chemical signature is that of pure hydrogen, and the canister is plastic. None of your equipment would have detected it.
Olivetti leaned closer.
Might I ask exactly who you are? What is your position at CERN?
I am a senior member of the research staff, and appointed liaison to the Vatican for this crisis.
Excuse me for being rude, but if this is indeed a crisis, why am I dealing with you and not your director? And what disrespect do you intend by coming into Vatican City in short pants?
Langdon groaned.
Commander Olivetti,
he intervened, trying to defuse what looked like a second bomb about to explode.
My name is Robert Langdon. I am a professor of religious studies in the U.S. and unaffiliated with CERN. I have seen an antimatter demonstration, and will vouch for Ms. Vetra's claim that it is exceptionally dangerous. We have reason to believe it was placed inside your complex by an anti-religious cult hoping to disrupt your conclave.
Olivetti turned, peering down at Langdon.
Ah, so now I have an American professor telling me we are being targeted by some anti-religious cult. How interesting.
Langdon spoke before he could stop himself. Have you heard of the Illuminati? The commander's icy exterior cracked. His eyes went white, like a shark about to attack.
I am warning you. I do not have time for this.
So you have heard of the Illuminati?
Olivetti's eyes stabbed like bayonets.
I am a sworn defendant of the Catholic Church. Of course I have heard of the Illuminati. They have been dead for decades.
Langdon shook his head.
At least postpone the event.
Postpone?
Olivetti's jaw dropped.
Such arrogance. A conclave is not some American baseball game you call on account of rain.
This is a sacred event, with a strict code and process. The protocols for this event are holy, not subject to modification.
Take me to the person in charge, Vittoria demanded.
Olivetti glared. You've got him.
No, she said. Someone in the clergy.
The veins on Olivetti's brow began to show.
The clergy has gone. With the exception of the Swiss Guard, the only ones present in Vatican City at this time are the College of Cardinals, and they are inside the Sistine Chapel.
How about the Chamberlain? Langdon stated flatly.
Who?
The late Pope's Chamberlain. Langdon repeated the words self-assuredly, praying his memory served him. He recalled reading once about the curious arrangement of Vatican authority following the death of a pope. If Langdon was correct, during the interim between popes, complete autonomous power shifted temporarily to the late pope's personal assistant, his chamberlain, a secretarial underling who oversaw conclave until the cardinals chose a new holy father.
Il Camerlengo, Olivetti scowled. The Camerlengo is only a priest here. He is the late pope's hand servant.
But he is here, and you answer to him. Olivetti crossed his arms.
Mr. Langdon, it is true that Vatican rule dictates the Camerlengo assume chief executive office during conclave, but it is only because his lack of eligibility for the papacy ensures an unbiased election. It is as if your president died, and one of his aides temporarily sat in the Oval Office. The Camerlengo is young, and his understanding of security, or anything else for that matter, is extremely limited. For all intents and purposes, I am in charge here.
Take us to him, Vittoria said.
Impossible. Conclave begins in 40 minutes. The Camerlengo is in the office of the Pope, preparing. I have no intention of disturbing him with matters of security.
Vittoria opened her mouth to respond, but was interrupted by a knocking at the door. Olivetti opened it. A guard in full regalia stood outside, pointing to his watch.
E l'ora, Comandante.
Olivetti checked his own watch and nodded. He turned back to Langdon and Vittoria, like a judge pondering their fate.
Follow me.
He led them out of the monitoring room, across the security center, to a small, clear cubicle against the rear wall.
My office.
Olivetti ushered them inside.
I will be back in 10 minutes. I suggest you use the time to decide how you would like to proceed.
With that, he slammed the door, rattling the heavy glass. In one fluid motion, he produced a key, inserted it, and twisted. A heavy deadbolt slid into place. Vittoria was measuring her options, her needs.
Tools, she told herself. There are always tools. Reevaluate your environment.
Instinctively, she lowered her shoulders, relaxed her eyes, and took 3 deep breaths into her lungs. The analytical mind of Vittoria Vetra, once calmed, was a powerful force. Within seconds, she realized their incarceration was actually their key to escape.
I'm making a phone call, she said suddenly.
Langdon looked up. I was about to ask if that bulge in your pocket was a cell phone. I suppose you could use it to call Kohler, but...
Not Kohler. Someone else.
Who?
The Camerlengo. Olivetti said he was in the Pope's office.
Okay. You know the Pope's private number?
No, but I'm not calling on my phone.
She nodded to a high-tech phone system on Olivetti's desk. It was riddled with speed dial buttons.
The head of security must have a direct line to the Pope's office.
I think I see a guard outside.
Yes, but he's locked out. This is Olivetti's private office. I doubt anyone else has a key.
Langdon frowned. You going to try all the buttons and hope to get lucky?
Nope, she said, striding to the phone. Just one.
Vittoria picked up the phone and pressed the top button.
Number 1. I bet you that's the Pope's office. What else would take primary importance for a Swiss Guard commander? Langdon didn't have time to respond. The guard outside the door started rapping on the glass with the butt of his gun. He motioned for her to set down the phone. Vittoria winked at him. The guard seemed to inflate with rage. Langdon moved away from the door and turned back to Vittoria. You damn well better be right, because this guy does not look amused. Damn, she said, listening to the receiver. A recording. Recording? Langdon demanded. The Pope has an answering machine? It wasn't the Pope's office, Vittoria said, hanging up. It was the damn weekly menu for the Vatican commissary. The Vatican switchboard is located in the Ufficio di Comunicazione, behind the Vatican post office. Tonight, the sole communications operator on duty sat quietly sipping a cup of caffeinated tea. The operator's thoughts of home evaporated with the buzz of an inside line on his switchboard. He looked at the blinking red light and scratched his head. That's odd, he thought. The zero line. Who on the inside would be calling operator information tonight? Who is even inside?
Città del Vaticano, prego, he said, picking up the phone.
The person on the line spoke in rapid Italian. On hearing the woman's voice, the operator stood suddenly, almost spilling his tea. He shot a look back down at the line. He had not been mistaken. An internal extension. The call was from the inside. There must be some mistake, he thought. A woman inside Vatican City? Tonight? The woman was speaking fast and furiously. She was urgent but rational. He listened to her request, bewildered.
Il Camerlengo,
the operator said, still trying to figure out where the hell the call was coming from.
I cannot possibly connect. Yes, I am aware he is in the Pope's office, but... Who are you again? And you want to warn him of...
He listened in shock, then made a decision.
Hold, please, he said,
putting the woman on hold before she could respond. Then he called Commander Olivetti's direct line.
There is no way that woman is really...
The line picked up instantly.
Per l'amore di Dio!
A familiar woman's voice shouted at him.
Place the damn call!
The door of the Swiss Guard security center hissed open. The guards parted as Commander Olivetti entered the room like a rocket. Turning the corner to his office, Olivetti confirmed what his guard on the walkie-talkie had just told him. Vittoria Vetra was standing at his desk, talking on the commander's private telephone.
Che coglione! Che è questa? He thought. The balls on this one.
Livid, he strode to the door and rammed the key into the lock. He pulled open the door and demanded,
What are you doing?
Vittoria ignored him. Yes, she was saying into the phone, and I must warn... Olivetti ripped the receiver from her hand and raised it to his ear.
Who the hell is this?
For the tiniest of an instant, Olivetti's inelastic posture slumped.
Yes, Camerlengo, he said. Correct, signore. But questions of security demand... Of course not. Certainly, but...
He listened.
Yes, sir, he said finally. I will bring them up immediately.
Vittoria and Langdon followed in silence as Commander Olivetti led them down a long rococo corridor in the Apostolic Palace, then turned left into an alcove and strode to one of the largest doors Langdon had ever seen.
L'Ufficio del Papa,
the commander declared, knocking on the door. Office of the Pope.
Avanti,
someone called from within. When the door opened, Langdon had to shield his eyes. The sunlight was blinding. Slowly, the image before him came into focus. The office of the Pope seemed more of a ballroom than an office. Red marble floors sprawled out in all directions to walls adorned with vivid frescoes. A colossal chandelier hung overhead, beyond which a bank of arched windows offered a stunning panorama of the sun-drenched St. Peter's Square.
My God, Langdon thought. This is a room with a view. At the far end of the hall, at a carved desk, a man sat writing furiously. Avanti, he called out again, setting down his pen and waving them over. Olivetti led the way, his gait military. Signore, he said apologetically. Non ho potuto. The man cut him off. He stood and studied his two visitors. The Camerlengo was nothing like the images of frail, beatific old men Langdon usually imagined roaming the Vatican. He was dressed in a simple black cassock that seemed to amplify the solidity of his substantial frame. He looked to be in his late 30s, indeed a child by Vatican standards. He had a surprisingly handsome face, a swirl of coarse brown hair, and almost radiant green eyes that shone as if they were somehow fueled by the mysteries of the universe. As the man drew nearer, though, Langdon saw in his eyes a profound exhaustion, like a soul who had been through the toughest 15 days of his life. I am Carlo Ventresca, he said, his English perfect, the late Pope's Camerlengo. His voice was unpretentious and kind, with only the slightest hint of Italian inflection. Vittoria stepped forward and offered her hand. Vittoria Vetra. Olivetti twitched as the Camerlengo shook Vittoria's hand. This is Robert Langdon, Vittoria said, a religious historian from Harvard University. Padre, Langdon said in his best Italian accent. He bowed his head as he extended his hand. No, no, the Camerlengo insisted, lifting Langdon back up. His Holiness's office does not make me holy. I am merely a priest, a chamberlain serving in time of need. Please, everyone sit. He arranged some chairs around his desk. Langdon and Vittoria sat. Olivetti apparently preferred to stand. The Camerlengo reseated himself at the desk, folded his hands, sighed, and eyed his visitors. Signore, Olivetti said, the woman's attire is my fault. Her attire is not what concerns me, the Camerlengo replied, sounding too exhausted to be bothered. Langdon felt hypnotized by the Camerlengo's presence. Young and wearied as he was, the priest had the air of some mythical hero, radiating charisma and authority. As quickly and precisely as he could, Langdon briefed the Camerlengo on the rush of events. The death of Vittoria's father, the resurgence of the Illuminati, the imminent destruction of Vatican City. As Olivetti fidgeted, the Camerlengo listened, and Vittoria sensed his growing concern. Are you certain this deadly device is inside Vatican City? The Camerlengo asked. Maybe someone took the camera out and is transmitting from somewhere else. Impossible, Olivetti said. Our external walls are shielded electronically to protect our internal communications. This signal can only be coming from inside, or we would not be receiving it. But with all due respect to Miss Vetra, this droplet she talks about is very small. It could not possibly be as explosive as she claims. My experience with explosives is extensive. Your experience is obsolete, Vittoria fired back. Basta, the Camerlengo declared. He spoke the word quietly, and yet it seemed to echo across the chamber. He continued, dangerous or not, whatever this thing is, it most certainly should not be inside Vatican City, no less on the eve of the conclave. I want it found and removed. Organize a search immediately. Olivetti persisted. Signore, even if we used all the guards to search the complex, it could take days to find this camera. Really, I must object. Commander, the Camerlengo's voice simmered with rage. May I remind you that when you address me, you are addressing this office. I do not understand why you are so hesitant to look for this device. If I did not know better, it would appear that you are causing this conclave intentional danger. Olivetti looked scornful. How dare you? I have served your Pope for 12 years,
and the Pope before that for 14 years. Since 1438, the Swiss Guard have...
The walkie-talkie on Olivetti's belt squawked loudly, cutting him off.
Comandante!
Olivetti snatched it up and pressed the transmitter.
Sono occupato. Cosa vuoi?
Scusi,
the Swiss guard on the radio said.
Communications here. I thought you would want to be informed that we have received a bomb threat.
Olivetti could not have looked less interested.
So, handle it. Run the usual trace and write it up.
We did, sir, but the caller...
The guard paused.
I would not trouble you, Commander. Except that he mentioned the substance you mentioned to me before. Antimatter.
Did you trace the call?
Olivetti stammered.
No luck. Cellular with heavy encryption. The IF signature suggests he's somewhere in Rome, but there's really no way to trace him.
All right, Olivetti said. I'll be down in a minute. Alert me immediately if he calls back. There was a moment of silence on the walkie-talkie.
The caller is still on the line, sir.
Olivetti looked like he'd just been electrocuted.
The line is open?
Yes, sir. We've been trying to trace him for 10 minutes, getting nothing but splayed ferreting. He must know we can't touch him because he refuses to hang up until he speaks to the Camerlengo.
Patch him through,
the Camerlengo commanded.
Now!
A moment later, the phone on Camerlengo Ventresca's desk began to ring. The Camerlengo rammed his finger down on the speakerphone button.
Who in the name of God do you think you are?
I am a messenger of an ancient brotherhood,
the voice announced in an alien cadence, metallic and cold, laced with arrogance.
A brotherhood you have wronged for centuries. I am a messenger of the Illuminati.
Langdon tried to place the accent. Middle Eastern, perhaps? He felt his muscles tighten, the last shreds of doubt withering away.
What do you want?
The Camerlengo demanded.
I represent men of science. Men who, like yourselves, are searching for the answers. Answers to man's destiny, his purpose, his creator.
Men of science do not resort to blackmail to further their causes, the Camerlengo said.
Blackmail?
The caller laughed.
This is not blackmail. We have no demands. The abolition of the Vatican is non-negotiable. There is nothing you can do.
Olivetti stormed toward the speakerphone.
Access to this city is impossible. You could not possibly have planted explosives in here.
You speak with the ignorant devotion of a Swiss guard. Surely you are aware that for centuries, the Illuminati have infiltrated elitist organizations across the globe. Do you really believe the Vatican is immune?
Jesus, Langdon thought. They've got someone on the inside. A transparent bluff,
Olivetti snapped.
Your influence cannot possibly extend so far. Why? How about the Swiss guards themselves? Are they not men? Ask yourself how else the canister could have entered your city. Or how four of your most precious assets could have disappeared this afternoon.
What's going on?
The Camerlengo said, looking bewildered. The caller laughed.
Your officer has not yet informed you. How sinful. Such pride. I imagine the disgrace of telling you the truth, that four cardinals he had sworn to protect seemed to have disappeared.
Olivetti erupted.
Where did you get this information?
Camerlengo,
the caller gloated.
Ask your commander if all your cardinals are present in the Sistine Chapel.
The Camerlengo turned to Olivetti, his green eyes demanding an explanation.
Signore,
Olivetti whispered in the Camerlengo's ear,
it is true that four of our cardinals have not yet reported to the Sistine Chapel. But there is no need for alarm. We are searching.
but I'm sure they just lost track of time and are still out, enjoying the grounds.
Enjoying the grounds?
The calm departed from the Camerlingo's voice.
They were due in the chapel over an hour ago.
Langdon shot Vittoria a look of amazement.
Missing cardinals? So that's what they were looking for downstairs.
Our inventory, the caller said, you will find quite convincing. There is Cardinal Lamassé from Paris. Cardinal Guidera from Barcelona. Cardinal Ebner from Frankfurt.
Olivetti seemed to shrink smaller and smaller after each name was read. The caller paused as though taking special pleasure in the final name.
And from Italy, Cardinal Baja.
The Camerlengo collapsed in his chair.
I preferiti, he whispered. How is it possible?
Langdon had read enough about modern papal elections to understand the look of desperation on the Camerlengo's face. Although technically any cardinal under 80 years old could become pope, only a very few had the respect necessary to command a two-thirds majority in the ferociously partisan balloting procedure. They were known as the preferiti, and they were all gone. Sweat dripped from the Camerlengo's brow.
What do you intend with these men?
What do you think I intend? I am a descendant of the Hashashin.
Langdon felt a shiver. He knew the name well.
Let the cardinals go, the Camerlengo said. Isn't threatening to destroy the city of God enough?
The caller chuckled.
Forget your four cardinals. They are lost to you. Be assured that their deaths will be remembered, though, by millions. Every martyr's dream. I will make them media luminaries, one by one. By midnight, the Illuminati will have everyone's attention. Why change the world if the world is not watching? Public killings have an intoxicating horror about them, don't they? You proved that long ago. The Inquisition. The torture of the Knights Templar. The Crusades.
He paused.
And of course, La Purga.
The Camerlengo was silent.
Do you not recall La Purga? The caller asked. Of course not. You are a child. Priests are poor historians anyway. Perhaps because their history shames them.
La Purga,
Langdon heard himself say.
1668. The church branded four Illuminati scientists with a symbol of the cross to purge their sins.
Who was speaking?
The voice demanded, sounding more intrigued than concerned.
Who else is there?
Langdon felt shaky.
My name is not important, he said, trying to keep his voice from wavering.
Speaking to a living Illuminatus was disorienting for him, like speaking to George Washington.
I am an academic who has studied the history of your brotherhood.
Superb, the voice replied. I am pleased there are still those alive who remember the crimes against us. What else do you know of La Purga?
After the brandings, Langdon spoke slowly, the scientists were murdered, and their bodies were dropped in public locations around Rome as a warning to other scientists not to join the Illuminati.
Yes. So we shall do the same. Quid pro quo. Consider it symbolic retribution for our slain brothers. Your four cardinals will die, one every hour starting at 8. We will kill them in churches, as a gesture of kindness, enabling God to commend their souls to heaven more expeditiously. It seems only right. Of course, the press will enjoy it too, I imagine.
And if we stake guards in every church, Olivetti said.
The caller laughed.
I fear the prolific nature of your religion will make that a trying task. Have you not counted lately? There are over 400 Catholic churches in Rome, and the biggest one is about to become a pile of rubble.
Silence hung. The Camerlengo looked sincerely sad.
You are misguided. A church is more than mortar and stone. You cannot simply erase 2,000 years of faith, any faith. The Catholic Church will continue, with or without Vatican City.
A noble lie, said the caller, but a lie all the same. The Vatican is a fortress. It is a fortress because the Catholic Church holds half of its equity inside its walls. Rare paintings, sculpture, devalued jewels, priceless books. Then there is the gold bullion and the real estate deeds inside the Vatican bank vaults. Inside estimates put the raw value of Vatican City at $48.5 billion. Quite a nest egg you're sitting on. Tomorrow, it will be ash. Liquidated assets, as it were. You will be bankrupt. Not even men of cloth can work for nothing.
The accuracy of the statement seemed to be reflected in Olivetti's and the Camerlengo's shell-shocked looks. Olivetti stepped forward. He seemed less combative now, as if he now sensed the reality facing him.
And what if some of that bullion went to fund your cause?
Do not insult us both, the caller said. We have more money than you can fathom.
The Camerlengo seemed to be weighing his options.
I preferiti are men of faith, he finally said. They do not fear death.
The caller sneered.
Leonardo Vetra was a man of faith, and yet I saw fear in his eyes last night. A fear I removed.
Vittoria, who had been silent, was suddenly airborne, her body taut with hatred.
Asino! He was my father!
A cackle echoed from the speaker.
Your father? What is this? Vetra has a daughter. You should know your father whimpered like a child at the end. Pitiful, really. A pathetic man.
Vittoria reeled as if knocked backward by the words. Langdon reached for her, but she regained her balance and fixed her dark eyes on the phone.
I swear on my life, before this night is over, I will find you.
Her voice sharpened like a laser.
And when I do...
The caller laughed coarsely.
A woman of spirit! I am aroused! Perhaps before this night is over, I will find you. And when I do...
The words hung like a blade. Then he was gone. Cardinal Mortati was sweating now in his black robe. Not only was the Sistine Chapel starting to feel like a sauna, but conclave was scheduled to begin in 20 minutes, and there was still no word on the four missing cardinals. In their absence, the initial whispers of confusion among the other cardinals had turned to outspoken anxiety. Mortati couldn't imagine where the truant men could be. With the Camerlengo, perhaps? He knew the Camerlengo had held the traditional private tea for the four preferiti earlier that afternoon, but that had been hours ago. Were they ill? Something they ate? Although there were four preferiti, few cardinals had any doubt who the next pope would be, namely Cardinal Aldo Baggia from Milan. Baggia's untainted record of service, combined with unparalleled language skills and the ability to communicate the essence of spirituality, had made him the clear favorite.
So, where the devil is he?
Mortati wondered. Mortati was particularly unnerved by the missing cardinals because the task of supervising this conclave had fallen to him. A week ago, the College of Cardinals had unanimously chosen Mortati for the office known as the Great Elector, the conclave's internal master of ceremonies. He was the logical choice. Not only was he the senior cardinal, but he had also been a confidant of the late Pope, a fact that elevated his esteem. Although Mortati was technically still within the legal age window for election, he was getting a bit old to be a serious candidate. At 79 years old, he had crossed the unspoken threshold beyond which the college no longer trusted one's health to withstand the rigorous schedule of the papacy. Mortati, many believed, could have been pope in his younger days had he not been so broad-minded. When it came to pursuing the papacy, there was a holy trinity. Conservative, conservative, conservative. Mortati had always found it pleasantly ironic that the late Pope, God rest his soul, had revealed himself as surprisingly liberal once he had taken office. Perhaps sensing the modern world progressing away from the Church, the Pope had made overtures, softening the Church's position on the sciences, even donating money to selective scientific causes. Sadly, it had been political suicide. Conservative Catholics declared the Pope senile, while scientific purists accused him of trying to spread the Church's influence where it did not belong. Langdon stood motionless at the Pope's bulletproof window and gazed down at the bustle of media trailers in St. Peter's Square. The Illuminati, like a serpent from the forgotten depths of history, had risen and wrapped themselves around an ancient foe. No demands, no negotiation. Just retribution. A revenge 400 years in the making. It seemed that after centuries of persecution, science had bitten back. The Camerlengo stood at his desk, staring blankly at the phone. Then he turned to Olivetti.
The sanctity of human life weighs above all. The cardinals are the foundation of this church.
I will speak openly, signore, Olivetti replied. The real world is my world. Let me advise you on the present situation. Say nothing to the cardinals. Seal conclave. It will buy us time to try other options. I have no intention of allowing this weapon to detonate.
Vittoria looked surprised.
You think you can find it?
Let me discuss our options with some of my surveillance specialists. There is a possibility, if we kill power to Vatican City, that we can eliminate the background RF and create a clean enough environment to get a reading on that canister's magnetic field.
Vittoria was impressed. The cardinals would certainly wonder what happened. Olivetti shook his head.
Conclaves are held by candlelight. The cardinals would never know. After conclave is sealed, I could pull all except a few of my perimeter guards and begin a search. 100 men could cover a lot of ground in 5 hours.
4 hours, Vittoria corrected. I need to fly the canister back to CERN. Detonation is unavoidable without recharging the batteries, and there is no way to recharge here.
4 hours, then, Olivetti said, frowning. Still time enough. Panic serves no one. Signore, you have 10 minutes. Go to the chapel, seal conclave.
But, Comandante, the Camerlengo urged, we cannot simply turn our backs on missing cardinals.
Olivetti looked the Camerlengo dead in the eye.
The prayer of St. Francis, signore. Do you recall it?
The young priest spoke the single line with pain in his voice.
God grant me strength to accept those things I cannot change.
Trust me, Olivetti said. This is one of those things.
Then he was gone. The central office of the British Broadcasting Corporation, BBC, is in London, just west of Piccadilly Circus. The switchboard phone rang, and a junior content editor picked up.
BBC,
she said, stubbing out her Dunhill cigarette. The voice on the line was raspy, with a Mideast accent.
I have a breaking story your network might be interested in.
The editor took out a pen and a standard lead sheet.
Regarding?
The papal election.
She frowned wearily. The BBC had run a preliminary story yesterday to mediocre response.
What's the angle?
Do you have a TV reporter in Rome covering the election?
I believe so.
I need to speak to him directly. There is a threat to the conclave. I have positive proof.
The editor put the collar on hold and stretched her neck. Then she looked at her computer and typed in the keywords Vatican City. When she saw the name of the field reporter covering the papal election, she copied down his satellite extension. Then, lighting another cigarette, she punched a button and gave the anonymous caller the reporter's number. Langdon's head ached, and he felt like he was skirting the edges of rationality. His vision was blurred by hideous images, explosions, cameras rolling, branded human beings. Then suddenly, like a crowd dispersed by a single gunshot, the images were gone. Robert Langdon bolted to his feet. His chair fell backward and crashed on the marble floor. Olivetti had left, but Vittoria and the Camerlengo jumped.
"I missed it," Langdon whispered, spellbound. "It was right in front of me." "Missed what?" Vittoria demanded.
Langdon turned to the priest. "Father, for 3 years I have petitioned this office for access to the Vatican archives. I've been denied 7 times.
"Mr. Langdon, I am sorry, but this hardly seems the moment to raise such complaints. I need access immediately. The 4 missing cardinals, I may be able to figure out where they're going to be killed."
Overhead, the bells of St. Peter's began to toll. The Camerlengo checked his pocket watch.
"I must go."
He paused a taut moment and looked up at Langdon.
"I will have a Swiss guard meet you at the archives. I am giving you my trust, Mr. Langdon. Go now."
The secret Vatican archives are located at the far end of the Borgia courtyard, directly up a hill from the gate of Santa Anna. They contain over 20,000 volumes and are rumored to hold such treasures as Leonardo da Vinci's missing diaries and even unpublished books of the Holy Bible. Langdon strode powerfully up the deserted Via delle Fondamenta toward the archives. Vittoria was at his side, keeping pace effortlessly. Her almond-scented hair tossed lightly in the breeze, and Langdon breathed it in. He felt his thoughts straying and reeled himself back. Vittoria said, "You going to tell me what we're looking for?" "A little book written by a guy named Galileo. It's supposed to contain the location of an ultra-secret Illuminati meeting place here in Rome. They call it the Church of Illumination." "Pretty bold calling a satanic lair a church," Vittoria said. Langdon shook his head. "Galileo's Illuminati were not in the least bit satanic. They were scientists who revered enlightenment. Their meeting place was simply where they could safely congregate and discuss topics forbidden by the Vatican. And here's the thing. They created a kind of map, a series of carefully concealed symbolic markers placed in public locations around the city. One marker led to the next and the next, a trail eventually leading to the Illuminati lair." Vittoria eyed him askance. "Sounds like a treasure hunt." Langdon chuckled. "In a manner of speaking, it is. The Illuminati called their string of markers the Path of Illumination. And anyone who wanted to join the Brotherhood had to follow it all the way to the end. A kind of test. A test created by the same anonymous Illuminati artist and prodigy who had created the ambigrammatic symbol Illuminati. The Church Fathers commissioned him to carve 4 sculptures."
"Illuminati sculptures?"
"Yes. Sculptures with 2 strict guidelines. First, the sculptures had to look like the rest of the religious artwork in Rome. And second, they had to have very specific themes. Each piece needed to be a subtle tribute to one of the 4 elements of science."
"4 elements?" Vittoria said. "There are over 100.
"Not in the 1600s, Langdon reminded her. Early alchemists believed the entire universe was made up of only four substances: earth, air, fire, and water. Vittoria seemed mystified. So this Illuminati artist created four pieces of art that looked religious, but were actually tributes to earth, air, fire, and water?
Exactly, Langdon said, quickly turning up the Via Sentinella toward the archives. By donating the artwork anonymously to specific churches and then using their political influence, the Brotherhood facilitated placement of these four pieces in carefully chosen churches in Rome. If an Illuminati candidate could find the first church and the marker for earth, he could follow it to air, and then to fire, and then to water, and finally to the Church of Illumination.
Vittoria suddenly got it. You're saying the four churches where the cardinals will be sacrificed are the same four churches that mark the ancient path of illumination?
I believe so, yes, Langdon replied.
He turned up the brick pathway before the archive building and immediately saw a Swiss guard hurrying across an adjacent lawn toward the front door. Not a word was spoken as the guard guided them into the building. They passed through four steel doors, two passkey entries, down a long stairwell, and into a foyer with two combination keypads. Passing through a high-tech series of electronic gates, they arrived at the end of a long hallway outside a set of wide oak double doors. The guard turned, speaking to them for the first time.
The archives are beyond those doors. I have been instructed to escort you this far and return for briefing on another matter.
But how do we get out? Vittoria demanded.
Monodirectional security. You will have no difficulties.
Although he knew time was short, Camerlengo Carlo Ventresca walked slowly. He needed the time alone to gather his thoughts before facing opening prayer. So far, he had followed his holy duties to the letter. As was Vatican tradition, following the Pope's death, the Camerlengo had personally confirmed expiration by placing his fingers on the Pope's carotid artery, listening for breath, and then calling the Pope's name three times. By law, there was no autopsy. Then he had sealed the Pope's bedroom, destroyed the papal fisherman's ring, shattered the die used to make lead seals, and arranged for the funeral. That done, he began preparations for the conclave. Conclave, he thought, the final hurdle. And suddenly the Camerlengo was falling, plummeting toward hell. People screaming, flames engulfing him, stones and blood raining from the sky. When the child awoke, he was in heaven. Everything around him was white. The light was blinding and pure. Although some would say a 10-year-old could not possibly understand heaven, the young Carlo Ventresca understood heaven very well. He was in heaven right now. Where else would he be? Even in his short decade on earth, Carlo had felt the majesty of God. Carlo's mother, Maria, brought him to Mass every day. The church was Carlo's home.
Why do we come to Mass every single day? Carlo asked, not that he minded at all.
Because I promised God I would, she replied. And a promise to God is the most important promise of all. Never break a promise to God.
Carlo promised her he would never break a promise to God. Then he asked the question that was uppermost in his mind.
Where is my father?
He said, already knowing his father had died before he was born. God is your father now, his mother would always reply. You are a child of the church. God has big plans for you, Carlo. The boy knew she was right. He could already feel God in his blood. Blood. Blood raining from the sky. Silence, then heaven. His heaven, Carlo learned as the blinding lights were turned off, was actually the intensive care unit in Santa Clara Hospital outside of Palermo. Carlo had been the sole survivor of a terrorist bombing that had collapsed a chapel where he and his mother had been attending Mass while on vacation. 37 people had died, including Carlo's mother. The papers called Carlo's survival the miracle of St. Francis. Carlo had, for some unknown reason, only moments before the blast, left his mother's side and ventured into a protected alcove to ponder a tapestry depicting the story of St. Francis. God called me there, he decided. He wanted to save me. Carlo was delirious with pain. God will watch over you and protect you forever, his mother had told him. But where was God now? Then, like a worldly manifestation of his mother's truth, a clergyman had come to the hospital. He was not any clergyman, he was a bishop. He prayed over Carlo, the miracle of St. Francis. When Carlo recovered, the bishop arranged for him to live in a small monastery attached to the cathedral over which the bishop presided. Carlo lived and tutored with the monks. He even became an altar boy for his new protector. And every night, Carlo prayed for his mother. God saved me for a reason, he thought. What is the reason? When Carlo turned 16, he was obliged by Italian law to serve 2 years of reserve military training. Carlo hated his new life, but he was determined to stick it out. He refused to fire a gun, so the military taught him how to fly a medical helicopter. Carlo hated the noise and the smell, but at least it let him fly up in the sky and be closer to his mother in heaven. When he returned from the military, Carlo entered the seminary. That had been 23 years ago. Now, as Camerlengo Carlo Ventresca descended the royal staircase, he tried to comprehend the chain of events that had delivered him to this extraordinary crossroads. Abandon all fear, he told himself, and give this night over to God. BBC journalist Gunther Glick sat sweating in the BBC network van parked on the eastern edge of St. Peter's Square and cursed his assignment editor for putting him on Pope Watch. Glick couldn't believe the BBC still sent reporters into the field to cover this schlock. Gazing out through the windshield, he felt more and more depressed by the minute. What have I accomplished in my life? He wondered aloud. Nothing. So give up, a woman's voice said from behind him. Glick jumped. He had almost forgotten he wasn't alone. He turned to the back seat, where his camerawoman, Chinita Macri, sat silently polishing her glasses. Chinita was black, although she preferred African-American, a little heavy, and smart as hell. She wouldn't let you forget it, either. She was an odd bird, but Glick liked her. Actually, things are looking up, she said now. Tonight you make your first 15 seconds of TV history. Glick groaned. I should have tried for an anchor spot. Macri laughed. With no experience? And that beard? Forget it. Glick ran his hands through the reddish gob of hair on his chin. I think it makes me look clever. The van's cell phone rang, mercifully interrupting yet another one of Glick's reveries. Glick answered in his best anchorman voice. Gunther Glick, BBC, live in Vatican City. The man on the line had a thick Arabic accent.
Listen carefully, he said. I'm about to change your life.
Langdon's eyes took in the sacred chamber of the Archivio Vaticano. He had imagined dusty bookshelves piled high with tattered volumes, priests cataloging by the light of candles and stained glass windows, monks poring over scrolls. Not even close. At first glance, the room appeared to be a darkened airline hangar, into which someone had built a dozen freestanding racquetball courts. Langdon knew, of course, what the glass-walled enclosures were. He wasn't surprised to see them. Humidity and heat eroded ancient vellums and parchments, and proper preservation required hermetic vaults like these, airtight cubicles that kept out humidity and natural acids in the air. Vittoria seemed dazzled. She stood beside him, staring mutely at the giant transparent cubes. But time was short. Langdon took a deep breath and walked to the nearest vault and squinted into the dim interior. Inside the glass were amorphous shapes he recognized as the usual bookshelves, parchment bins, and examination tables.
Pietro l'Eremita, Le Crociate, Urbano II, Levant.
They're labeled, he said, still walking. But it's not Alpha Author. Looks like the Vatican has its own system. I think it's a thematic classification. Thematic? Vittoria said, sounding like a disapproving scientist. Sounds inefficient. Actually, Langdon thought, considering it more closely, this may be the shrewdest cataloging I've ever seen. Everything in this vault, he announced, feeling more confident now, centuries of material has to do with the Crusades. That's this vault's theme. Vittoria frowned. Fine. So, Professor, what's the name of this Galileo thing we're looking for? Langdon couldn't help but smile. Well, he said, it's most often referred to by a number. 503.
Meaning?
She asked. I could never figure it out. But recently that began to change. Langdon was moving from vault to vault, and Vittoria had little trouble keeping up with him. It's my firm belief, Langdon went on, that the number 503 is embedded in Galileo's Diagramma della Verità, the Diagram of Truth. It was Galileo's most secretive work, supposedly some sort of treatise on scientific facts he held to be true but was not allowed to share. Vittoria now looked intrigued. And you think this diagramma contains the clue? The information about the path of illumination? Langdon nodded. Diagramma is how Galileo got the word out. That I'm sure of. He entered the third row of vaults and continued surveying the indicator tabs. Unfortunately, it's believed that only one copy of Diagramma survived beyond the 18th century.
One?
Vittoria looked momentarily starstruck as she glanced around the room.
And it's here?
Confiscated from the Netherlands by the Vatican shortly after Galileo's death. I've been petitioning to see it for years now, ever since I realized what was in it. As if reading Langdon's mind, Vittoria moved across the aisle and began scanning the adjacent bay of vaults, doubling their pace. Thanks, he said. Look for reference tabs that have anything to do with Galileo, science, scientists. You'll know it when you see it.